Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly.
To another exciting podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Tiny here tonight, here for one of my tiny talks, as Young Nose Johnson so kindly named this type of a podcast. Every once in a while, everybody's busy, and it's just left up to me. The Scotchy Bourbon Boys, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and we podcast pretty much twice a week, and at least 7 to 8 times a month. So glad to have you all here tonight. This podcast is based off of this is a more informative podcast. The theme of it is whiskey rules. Now, there can be taken a bunch of different ways. One, whiskey does rule. Bourbon, especially, as you know, for the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, but also the rules of whiskey are another aspect of something that a lot of people do know, but there's still a lot of people that are new to it that aren't clear on it. So I like to do some informative podcasts, and tonight's podcast is going to be based off of the aspect of the rules of whiskey. Then there's also two different types of rules that you can actually go by. The two different kind of rules are, there's rules on how to make bourbon, whiskey, Irish whiskey. We're going to cover those pretty quickly. But also, there are rules to how to drink whiskey. And that's something that, as I go through this awesome bourbon and scotch and Irish whiskey journey, just the general drinking whiskey, you start to learn how to be able to do this in a very responsible manner. But you just have to remember, when you are drinking whiskey, especially at events that you might be there and you're working professionally, it's very important to be able to keep yourself coherent and sober. But it seems like it gets the best of us from time to time. So there's a bunch of rules that I've learned in that manner. So it's great to have you here and for this tiny talk on the rules. But first, we got a couple things to cover. The Scotchy Bourbon Boys is pretty much on all podcast formats. Please listen and subscribe to whatever podcast format you're on. We are on the main one, Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio. You can ask Alexis to listen to the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and you will have her play the podcast. That's really kind of a cool thing. I do that every once in a while, just ask it and it comes up and starts playing. And so it's kind of exciting. But any other, there's a bunch of other ones. We're on it. Check us out there. Now, we also have a Facebook group, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and we have a Facebook page. In the Facebook group, that's the one right now. We are, I believe, I can check it out right here. It's right in front of me. We are 417 strong, and I'd like to shout out on the group to the seven members that joined this week, our newest members. It's Rachel Miller, Thomas Anastasia, David Evskew the Third, Eric Sutter, Teresa KJ TJ Smith, Holly Gregory, and Vinny Kahlo. Great shout out. Great to have the new members. The Scotchy Bourbon Boys group. If you're in the Ohio area, we're in Canton, Ohio, we meet. If you're outside of the Ohio area and you want to come up for a meeting, we are very, very open to working around a schedule so that we can get the people to the meetings. So we haven't announced our next meeting. It's probably going to be, I would say, sometime in late June. So I will have an announcement on that coming up. So it's great to have everybody available for those meetings. We meet live. We get a theme, and we drink or taste a lot of different really, really good whiskeys. There's a chance that if you come to a meeting, you're going to be able to drink something that's not readily available. The bourbon collection for the Scotchy Bourbon Boys is huge. We like to finish up those meetings with Johnny Walker Blue. When the bottle runs low, we all pitch in and get another bottle. So it's one of the cool aspects of the meeting that we started with from the start. But we're also the Facebook page. You can like that on Facebook. But we're on Twitter at Scotchy The. We are also on Instagram, the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Check us out on YouTube. We're starting to really up our game on YouTube. Tonight's podcast, I've got two cameras on me, two different camera angles. So we're really kind of excited about that. So you can check us out on YouTube. But then also, if you want to get a hold of us, our email is thescotchybourbonboys@gmail.com. Ask any questions. Sometimes we answer the questions on podcasts. But then also, we have a website, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Check us out on that. It gives you all the information on the podcast, who we are, gives you some information on what we do as far as events. We kind of keep it updated with pictures when we go off and do some fun things. And then also we have the Scotchy blog, which is run by Young Nose Johnson. He gives once a month in-depth study of some form of whiskey, which is really kind of cool. It's a really kind of unique perspective. And then also you can check us out on Patreon from the website. Up in the top right-hand corner, click that button, take it to where we are, the Patreon. It'll take you right to the Scotchy Bourbon Boys Patreon. And on Patreon, we can use any support that anybody gives us. It's a great way to get support, give us support, but also get great swag. The swag is Scotchy Bourbon Boys Glencairns, t-shirts, shirts, and there's many different tasting mats, special tastings with the Scotchy Bourbon Boy, with the whiskey included, bunch of stuff like that. Really kind of cool. The lowest way to support us is the posting chip. And that is, just check it out on Patreon. Please support us. All the money that we support goes right back into the group and the podcast. There's travel expenses. Bourbon is not cheap, but it's not like we need, we have to have it to keep the podcast going, but we appreciate the support that the people are giving us. That's a wonderful way to support us. So with that said, we've covered that. We've covered the new members, and that leads us to the whiskey rules. So there's a bunch of different categories. Now, out of all the different categories that are out there for making whiskey, the cool part of it is I've tasted all of them, except for one where I have not actually, I've not actually tasted Japanese whiskey. I haven't gotten into that. It's the closest thing I got is the Legend, which is made by Jim Beam. The Legend brand is a combination of a Japanese whiskey and Kentucky bourbon mixed together. And it's a very, very nice bourbon. I enjoyed it. But other than that, there's the different categories. Now, there's bourbon. There is Irish whiskey, Scotch whiskey, Canadian whiskey, Tennessee whiskey, and then wheat and rye whiskeys. So, out of those categories, basically there's rules. Now, the bourbon rules I have memorized. I have my bourbon stewardship through Stave and Thief Society. I'm excited that when we go down in August to the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, not August, in September, we are going to do the official full day class on becoming official bourbon stewards, where they get into the tasting notes and tasting kits and all the different things. And then you go through and pass a test, and that allows you to be, this is more official to go into the actual restaurant industry and actually practice your knowledge of bourbon and whiskey. But bourbon is very specific, and it was done that way. But I don't think exactly they knew exactly what they were going to do in 1964 when they made the resolution that bourbon had to be made in the United States, and they put down the rules. Little did they know that eventually, if they would have done that with vacuum cleaners or cars, the same rules applied to bourbon that they would apply to a GMC. GMC never would have had a problem. It really comes down to that one of the rules for bourbon is it has to be produced in the United States. So a lot of the bourbon companies in Kentucky have been bought by foreign companies, but they can't move it out of the United States because it has to be moved here. And why would you move it out of Kentucky? Because Kentucky is one of the best places to make bourbon based off climate and water supply and everything like that. So basically the fact that they said bourbon could only be made in the United States, anywhere else in the world that they try and make something that's like bourbon, they can't call it it. They have to call it corn whiskey. And the rules for corn whiskey are not the same as the rules for bourbon. But bourbon has to be made in the United States. It's made from at least 51% corn. Those are easy. Now, this is where it is distilled at 160 proof or below. It is put into a new charred oak container. It doesn't have to be United States oak. Some people say U.S. oak, but it doesn't. It could be French oak or whatever, but it has to be put into a new charred oak container. It is put into the container at 125 proof or below. It contains no added substances other than water. Now, those are the main rules of bourbon. If you put it in the container and then dump it out instantly, you can't use the container again, but it is bourbon. There is no age requirement for bourbon. Now, they come up with different things. Your label will tell you Kentucky straight bourbon or straight bourbon whiskey or Iowa straight bourbon. But when it's called straight bourbon, what it means is that it's been aged for 2 or more years, but in order not to put 2 years or 3 years on the label, it has to be aged at least 4 years. So in other words, if they age the bourbon 4 years, it becomes straight bourbon, that they don't have to put an age statement on the label. But if they age it 2 or 3 years, it would have to be straight bourbon aged for 2 years, or straight bourbon aged for 25 months, or straight bourbon aged for 3 years. Once you get to the fourth year, you no longer have to put the lower age statement in it. And most Kentucky straight bourbons, you don't see an age statement on. They're aged for 4 years. So that covers the rules for bourbon. Now, the bourbon that I have here tonight is the Knob Creek Select. And then also, this is a barrel select at 120 proof from the Party Source. It was put in the barrel at on February 8th, 2011, and then 9 years, 7-7, which is 2020, it was bottled. So it's a 9 year Knob Creek. Now, it doesn't say it on the label, but it is because this is a single barrel, and from that barrel, that's how old it was. Now, tonight, I'm also sipping on a Luca Mariano single barrel, the single barrel bourbon. I picked this sample up from them. It's a spectacular bourbon, and I just like it, so I've been sipping on it, getting ready for the podcast. It's delicious. But that takes us to Irish whiskeys. Now, Irish whiskeys are a little bit more different, but the rules are they have a little more latitude than, let's say, bourbon, scotch, or Tennessee whiskey. It has to be produced in Ireland, obviously. It is made from cereal grains. It is fermented by the action of yeast. It is distilled to a maximum of 189.6 proof. It is aged in Ireland in wooden casks for at least 3 years. And the casks can't be more than 700 liters. So those different Irish whiskeys. Now they have a malt Irish whiskey, which is made from only water and malted barley at a single distillery and made in pot stills. Then there's pot still Irish whiskey. It's made from malted and unmalted barley distilled only in a pot still. Grain Irish whiskeys is made in a continuous distillation column still and from unmalted grains. And then blended Irish whiskey is when you blend whiskeys that are made in pot and column stills. Now, one of the things that happens in Ireland and Scotland is that blenders buy barrels from distilleries and they mix them. Those blends, the blended scotch, was very popular for a long, long time. That was what people did. That's getting me into the scotch right now. We're going to take it into scotch because it's a very popular thing. And before bourbon, after bourbon was very popular and the white spirits were taking over in the 80s, scotch niched its own market and people were drinking, drank scotch, and that was the hot market that was preceding bourbon. So scotch, the rules, and the Irish whiskey I have here is a triple distilled Irish whiskey. It is a Jameson black barrel, and it was charred for a high, smooth taste. Now, one of the rules of Irish whiskey is it's aged in Ireland in a wooden cask for at least 3 years. So you could see bourbon doesn't have to be aged for 3 years. It can be aged for seconds and then poured back out. But that doesn't make good bourbon. I mean, nobody's doing that because it's still technically like on the moonshine level or the white dog. But those are the rules. And so you could not age it, but the problem would be is nobody would buy it. So with Irish whiskey, it doesn't have to be an oak cask. They could put it in maple casks, but they have to, the size of 700 liters is the limit. And then it has to be in that cask for 3 years. So Irish whiskey has that 3 year guarantee. Now I've got the Jameson here, and Jameson is a fantastic Irish whiskey, but the one thing is we'll get into other aspects of rules is that I've found that the majority of Irish whiskeys at this moment are 80 proof or 40% ABV. And it's ironic that this is a rule. Now, when you get into an Irish whiskey, you definitely get a yellow goldener yellow, like apple juice color. It's not that rich, dark, charred barrel oak that you get those red and those, you know, brown, you know, colors on the, you know, the color aspect of it is, the color aspect is, this is gold and honey and straw, where you get the mahogany and the molasses and the ambers from the bourbons. But one thing is that I learned, is that all proofs don't necessarily tie into how intoxicated you can get. And this is a rule that I learned. When drinking Irish whiskey at 80 proof, I do way worse than I would at drinking Booker's at 127 proof. I could drink the same amount of Booker's that I do the 80 proof Jameson and get way more fucked up on the Irish whiskey. So you learn your rules by as you go about it. And we learned this about Irish whiskey. We did our Irish whiskey podcast cast on a Tuesday night. And I just had my normal, I think we had four different expressions, Bushmills, Jameson, Black Barrel. I mean, it was Tallermore Dew, and I forget the other one. But, you know, we were just taking our normal half pours. And when it was over, it was like I drank a bottle of whiskey. So you just don't know, and you can't base it off of proof. You have to base it off of style and how it affects you. I find Irish whiskeys are sweet and fruity. And then this black barrel, which is a charred barrel, which is nice, adds a little bit of, what would you say? It adds like more like a steak char, not the smokiness of, let's just say, a scotch. All right, that gets us to scotch. There are two basic type of scotch whiskeys and three types of blended scotch whiskey. The prerequisites to be a scotch can be boiled down to six main points. One, it's produced in Scotland. Once again, that's the number one rule of bourbon produced in the U.S. and Irish and Scotch and whatever. Those are easy. It is made from malted barley. It may contain other cereal grains. Its sugar conversion must use natural enzymes from malted barley. It is put into oak casks no larger than 700 liters. It is aged in Scotland in oak casks for at least 3 years. It contains no added substances other than caramel coloring. Now, in Irish whiskey, it doesn't have that no caramel, you know, you can add that, you can't add anything to it. But with scotch, you can't. Now, this is where scotch gets kind of like confusing, because it's like the first thing you'll see is a single malt. And you're like, oh, that just means it's made from one grain. But no, that is not what it means. It's not made from one grain. It's made from only water and malted barley at a single distillery and made in pot stills. So a single malt is pot stilled at one distillery. And that's very important, because you can have three, four different distilleries distilling a bourbon here in the United States at three different locations. That's not something that they, you know, anybody cares about. So at that point, you know, it's kind of like the mash bill, the yeast and everything. As long as that's all the same, you know, you can make Jim Beam at 14 different places. Not that they do, but you can't. Then a single grain is made at a single distillery. So single just means it's made at one distillery and is made with multiple grains, malted or unmalted, in addition to water and malted barley. The word single refers to the fact it comes from one distillery, not one grain. So that's what single grain. Now, blended malt scotch is a blend of two or more single malt scotch whiskies from different distilleries. Now, that's one thing that's very unique, is that scotch blending, like I said, when it comes to Johnny Walker Blue, Black, they aren't distillers. They basically are blenders. So they are purchasing all their barrels from different places and blending them all together to make a fantastic scotch. So the blends are where it was at for a long time. But when once the 80s hit and everybody was going to the clear spirits, that's when the single malts and the single grains started to be very important, because they weren't blended. They were just all made at one distillery. So that's why that became more popular, because then it became that distillery's signature taste and aging. So then there's the blended grain scotch, is a blend of two or more single grain scotch whiskies from different distilleries. And then the blended scotch is a blend of one or more single malt scotch whiskies or one or more single grain scotch whiskey. So the blended scotch means you can mix the blended malt and the blended grain. You can single malt and single grains. But if you're just going to do a single malt or blended malt, you're just taking single malts from different places and blending them together. And the same thing with the grains. So it's like, that's pretty clear on the scotch, which is pretty cool. But it has to be in oak casks for at least 3 years, where Irish whiskey only has to be in wood casks. So scotch, based off of how it can, Irish whiskey and Scotch whiskey can use used barrels. And one of the things that Scotch does is buys the barrels from America that the bourbon was made in, because you can't reuse it and call it bourbon if you reuse it. It just has to be American whiskey. A lot of the distilleries now in, Kentucky or whatnot are making American whiskeys, which are just aged in their used bourbon barrels. It's pretty much can be the same exact mash bill going in, being distilled and being put in. But what happens is they can't call it bourbon because they're reusing the barrel. And that used to be something, when I first started just 3 years ago, something that was very important. And people would, if you were reusing the barrel and it wasn't bourbon, it was like somehow you were attacking somebody at their soul. But now people are accepting the American whiskeys. They're accepting the finished whiskeys that have been happening out in the world. So that's kind of a good thing. Now, the other whiskey that we're going to talk about is the Canadian whiskey. So Canadian whiskey, and that you're talking, what I got here is a 9-year Canadian club. The Canadians are very good blenders, but the rules for Canadian whiskey are very, 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 very wide open. It doesn't hold the blenders, or it doesn't hold the whiskey makers to much to make, a whiskey. So Canadian whiskey is the most open category on the list. It is the only one that allows flavoring to be added, and like Scotch, caramel coloring can be added for color. To be recognized as Canadian whiskey, it is produced in Canada, it is made from cereal grains, and it is aged in Canada in wooden barrels for at least 3 years. So once again, it has the 3-year aging statement, but at the same time, you can add flavor and color. Now, what's crazy is, let's just take Jim Beam, for instance. They do add flavor into the Kentucky Straight Bourbon, but it's no longer bourbon. But what they call it, is flavored Kentucky Straight Bourbon. They make peach, orange, you can add the flavors, but that's obvious. you're making a bourbon with a flavor infusion for sweetness, for more tasteability. The actual proof is down a little bit. So overall, the flavored bourbons are more popular for drink making and that type of stuff. Whereas the Canadian whiskey, it could be Canadian Club or Canadian, Canadian Club. It can be Crown Royal. Now, Crown Royal makes peach, but Crown Royal peach can be called Canadian whiskey because they can add flavors and they can add colors. So that's the difference there. Now, it comes to the Tennessee whiskey. Now, Tennessee whiskey is a conundrum because under the 1964 resolution Congress passed, Jack Daniel's, a Tennessee whiskey, I have the Jack Daniel's right here, is considered Tennessee sour mash whiskey. They don't call themselves bourbon. They want to be known as Tennessee whiskey, but in all practicality, based off of the resolution, Jack Daniel's is bourbon, but they don't. So what it is to be Tennessee whiskey, it is produced in Tennessee. So right there, bourbon doesn't have to be produced in Tennessee. It can be produced in Kentucky. It has to be just in the United States. It is made from at least 51% corn. It is distilled at 160 or below. It is put into barrels at 125 or below. But the Tennessee whiskey is, I believe, what do they call it? The Macon County process, the Lincoln County process. Thank you. That was dumb on me, Macon County. I'm like watching old movies or something. The Lincoln County process, it is filtered through maple wood charcoal before barreling. It is put into a new charred oak barrel. All the rules are the same, except for they say it has to be filtered through maple wood charcoal before barreling. So when you're looking at George Dickel Tennessee whiskey, or the Tennessee whiskeys, they're filtering it through, which filters out some. They're using maple, not oak, but the filtering process goes in and it takes out impurities, and then it goes into the oak. And Congress decided that just because you were filtering out impurities through a maple, dripping it through a charred maple charcoal process, didn't change it from being bourbon. So it's technically bourbon, but Tennessee whiskey at the same time. So then the last category are wheat and rye whiskeys, wheat and rye and malt whiskeys. And those basically have the same exact rules of bourbon, but it's just 51% wheat, 51% rye, or 51% malt, or 51% oat. If you want to call it whatever your grain is that you're using, you want to call it, it has to be over 51%. So that's the main thing about the wheat and the ryes and the malts. And tonight, I have a wonderful, the Spirit of French Lick, sponsors the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and I was able to so graciously pick up this bottle. This bottle was picked up for me by Steve Coombs. This is the Bottles Unlimited store pick. It's barrel number 162 from 2016. So this is Solomon Scott has not been released yet at the distillery for the Spirit of French Lick, but I have a bottle from a store pick. And tonight I'm going to open it and have myself a little bit. Now, once again, this right here, I'm not a fan of rye whiskey. Now, I keep saying that. I've had some bad rye whiskeys, but lately I've had rye whiskey after rye whiskey that I've been tasting, and that's been good, good, and better, except for I did not like Heaven's Door rye whiskey, but it's mainly based off of I don't like dill pickles it just turns me off. I like dill pickles, but when I'm drinking whiskey, I just don't like that rye dill high flavor. So this is Solomon Scott rye whiskey. It is 66%. No, let's see what. 68% rye, 35% corn, and 5% malt. So I'm going to give this baby a little bit of try. Right there, it does, you know, it goes along with all the rules of rye whiskey. And that does not have a bad rye nose to me. There's lots of caramel. And red licorice. That's some. Wow. That is an Indiana straight rye whiskey, and it is fantastic. It's got Allen's signature fresh baked bread yeasty taste. No dill. I can taste what I think rye wheat should taste. You can actually, it's like much closer to the grain, and that is one of the Spirit of French Lick's main things is respect the grain. And again, I found another rye. I'm like 5-6 ryes in a row that I like. I used to say I didn't like rye whiskey, but I'm going to have to kind of change my tune lately, or they're just getting really good at making this stuff. So, I've got a little couple things to add when it comes to bourbon. We covered the bourbon. The reason why they want, when we're talking about the making bourbon, why they want it distilled at no higher than 160 proof, because when you're talking about higher than that, you're taking out almost all the flavor. Like the goal of vodka, when you produce that at 185, 190, you're distilling it at that, is to take all the flavor out. The definition of vodka is an odorless, tasteless alcohol. So right there, that's what they're shooting for. So they keep it under 160 proof on the still to keep the flavor in that you're going before you put it in the barrel. Then you cannot put it into the oak container no higher than 125 proof, which basically, once again, it's designed to keep it, the watering down aspect, adding the water to 125 happens before then it goes in the barrel. It could gain or lose proof depending on where it is in the rickhouse. A lot of people to get more flavor lately have been having much lower entry proofs into the barrel. Can't go higher, but you can put it in at 115. You can put it at 112, 109, see what comes out. And it a lot of times gives you a little bit more flavor based off of you're not adding the water to proof this down to, let's just say, a 120 or a 180 or an 80 proof. You're basically taking it down, proofing it down with water at that one point, and then you don't have to proof it down with water that hasn't been aged in the barrel. So that's kind of the thought there. Now, once again, we talked about straight bourbon whiskey. Now, Kentucky bourbon, it's basically bourbon that's made in Kentucky. So to call it Kentucky straight bourbon or Kentucky bourbon, it just is required to be aged at least 1 year in Kentucky. Let's see, right. Bonded whiskey, that's the other rule. Okay, bonded whiskey, when you see a bonded whiskey, it must be aged at least 4 years and up to 20 years. Okay, so the Bonded Act, you put it in federally secure warehouses or rickhouses, and that it ages in, and then basically you know what you're getting. And the reason why I say that is all the whiskey in the bottle must have been distilled in the same calendar year at the same distillery. It must be bottled at 100 proof. So right there, and then I believe also it must be from the grain of one growing season. So you know what you're getting when it's a bottled in bond. So that, that bottled in bond act that, Colonel Taylor was very, you know, that, that changed whiskey because for a long time, whiskey was being messed with by rectifiers after it left. So they'd have the barrel. Someone would buy the barrel and they'd add a bunch of stuff in and they'd sell it from the barrel into jugs. Then Old Forester was the first one to put it into their own bottles, but it still didn't mean when they started bottling and sealing it, but it still could be tampered with. But a bonded whiskey was basically federally watched by the tax. Every single distillery had a person that worked there that was the tax collector. And in the bonded version, he was overwatching it, making sure that nobody was going in and messing with the any of the process, making sure that it was aged 4 years, making sure that it, when it got bottled, it was all, everything was, you know, to specification. And plus, if you messed with a bonded bottle, there was higher penalties. So there you go. Now, I think that was it. Finished or flavored whiskey? Okay, so finished whiskey. That's the last thing I think I want to get into. Finished whiskey, and it basically is something that's been taking on popularity. You make a bourbon, a straight bourbon or whatever, and at this point, you bow out and you put it into a wine cask, or you put it into a beer cask, or you basically finish it in a cognac cask or a rum cask. It's no longer bourbon, but it's finished bourbon. And finished bourbons, from everything that I can see, at one point, finished bourbons were up like 3 years ago. People were thumbing their nose at finished bourbons. It's not bourbon. It's not bourbon. That's all I heard initially when I first started out, you know, 3 years ago. All it was just like, it's like you mentioned the finished whiskey and you just were the devil. Oh my God, that's not bourbon. How the fuck can you taste that? That is just not bourbon. They're wrecking it. Bourbon has these rules and you have to stick by them. And that's the only thing I'm going to ever fucking drink. And if you think for 1 second that you can drink something that's finished in a barrel, you can go fuck yourself. I mean, that's how intense it was back then. You would just get fried on Facebook. You asked the wrong question. Oh my God, it's bourbon. You should know this. Oh, newbie. It was just so vicious. And now that it just seems like over the past, this bourbon boom that happened on social media and everything, that people are way more accepting. Yeah, I don't hear it at all the time. I'm just not hearing, well, those people, I think, have gone away. Now, one of the rules, unwritten rules, for the longest time, because this was very difficult to do, is that distillers wanted consistency in their taste profiles. So because it was hard to do, everybody wanted it. Well, it's kind of like when Jim Beam started making Jim Beam. When you bought that bottle of Jim Beam, you wanted it to taste like Jim Beam. They didn't want it to. So you're making hundreds of thousands of bottles of Jim Beam, and your goal as a distiller is to make them taste the same. That, for the longest time, was the skill. It was very difficult to do, to keep that. You had different, you know, you're making 4 years and one batch for 4 years. The summer was cold as shit and whatever. And then the next batch, the summers for two of those years, it was so hot that everybody was dying on their, you know, and then the other 2 years were cold, or you were just getting, and to keep that taste profile the same, it took a master distiller with an unbelievable palate and understood what each of the barrels were, and he had to mix these barrels and make massive amounts of whiskey that tasted the same. Not an easy thing to do. But when the bourbon industry in the 70s started to die out and other spirits started to come in, what happened was they had to redefine themselves. So they started redefining themselves by doing specialty type stuff. The Bookers, the Bakers, Blantons, they started coming up with different ideas. But these today, what's really cool is that not you still have your Jim Beam on the shelf. One of the is the number one selling bourbon in the world. I believe it's number eight. I believe Jack Daniel's is number three, but that's a Tennessee whiskey. You're talking about Old Forester. And then you're talking about Jim Beam, Beam Suntory making Jim Beam. And Jim Beam pretty much keeps their flavor profile the same across the board. But what's been happening with bourbon people lately in this bourbon boom is they accept different flavors. They accept the onslaught of single barrel picks has been proving this, because I'll give you the classic example for me was Buffalo Trace is a good bourbon. I like it. It's $24, $25 a bottle. You know what you're going to get when you drink it. It's some good stuff. It has a nice caramel flavor, consistency for the most part, but it does. It's a small batch bourbon, but it does not exist. There's no way to get it in a single barrel. They don't make single barrel Buffalo Trace, but what they do allow you to do is do a barrel pick, and a barrel pick of Buffalo Trace or a store pick, which is a barrel pick for the specific store where everybody goes down to Kentucky from that store and they pick that particular barrel. That is a single barrel. And those single barrels, almost all the time, if you have somebody who knows what they're doing, do not taste anything like Buffalo Trace. They usually are like candy factory versions of Buffalo Trace. We're talking about butterscotch, caramel. It's so sweet. It's so spectacular. You get the right store pick and it's just like, holy crap. That's Buffalo Trace. So that's where I think right now those store picks and those single barrels, like a single barrel Elijah Craig, they don't make a single barrel Elijah Craig. But when you're doing store picks, it's a single barrel Elijah Craig or state picks. State picks here in Ohio are the same thing. It's the state going down and picking single barrels and bottling it. So a state pick of Elijah Craig is the same. So you hope that the people in the state that are picking these barrels are picking out good barrels. So that's where it's at. So we covered the rules of making whiskey. That was a pretty good, review. But what I wanted to say was now the rules of drinking whiskey. I would say, based off of everything that I've learned in my 50-some years, is that if you're going to drink whiskey, don't mix. Don't mix anything. Now, if you're going to start drinking whiskey in drinks, stay with the drinks, but pay attention to how drunk you're getting, because drinks with whiskey infused with sugar, which usually drinks have, cause you to get drunk faster. But if you're going to be drinking drinks, a lot of times start off with a couple drinks and then maybe go to a couple neat and stay. But whatever's in that drink, if you're drinking bourbon or if you're drinking scotch, stay with bourbon and scotch if you go to neat. Don't start mixing. Don't mix whiskeys. If you mix whiskeys, I've learned that usually you end up very intoxicated and probably too intoxicated. Even if you're doing different samples and you're mixing and you're trying let's just say all the different bourbons. Mixing different bourbons from different companies, if you do that too much, you can get yourself in trouble too. So I always find that if you just try and stick to bourbon, and if you're mixing those from companies, just try not to get out of, take it too far. But the other rule that I've had, and I've been refining this rule, is you want to 100% make sure if you're drinking whiskey, especially neat, and you're drinking all day, that you make sure you keep eating and drinking a lot of water. This will help immensely. It keeps you from being dehydrated, which the next day you'll always thank me, because it's always good to do at least a glass of water per 2 ounce pour, if you can do that. So a lot of times if people are doing that, ask for a bottle of water if you're tasting or whatnot. And then make sure that when you're done at the tasting that you finish the bottle of water. That's very important. But also eating throughout the day. Eat breakfast, especially if you're going to be tasting in the morning. I usually keep it to a bagel. It's neutral, doesn't affect my palate. But then make sure if you've been drinking in the morning that you hit lunch. We did that when we were on the podcast last time, but we ended up at Cozy's, which is a Maker's Mark lunch place, right around the corner from the distillery, and their pours are insane. It's kind of like we thought we were going to go in there and get less drunk by laying down some food base. We ordered a Maker's 46 and we ended up with a full rocks glass for $5 of Maker's Mark 46 that really did not help the day. But anyways, like I said, just keep eating and pace yourself. Now, this is based off of doing this and starting to do this more and more seriously as far as drinking and critiquing and going to multiple different places and dealing with people. It's just, you have to keep your wits about you. You can't, if you start to lose it, that basically, now I would say this, everybody in the whiskey industry understands if you lose it, because they've all been there. Everybody who's drank whiskey, made whiskey, and has something to do with this industry as far as making a living, this industry, you're going to get bit every once in a while. There's no doubt about it. But the more you go down and the more you learn, you can learn how to do it better and better. So I hope I shared some of that knowledge with you tonight. And that pretty much covers it. I'm Tiny. We are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And thank you for being a part of us and listening to the podcast. Just remember, good whiskey equals good friends. I was talking on Facebook about this. The culture that we are in this industry and what we're promoting, it used to be doing shots and getting fucked up. And, you know, that's what the kind of wild whiskey, you know, aspect of it. Now it is sit on your back porch by the fire and sip a pour of your favorite, you know, bourbon, scotch, whatever, relax. More women, especially women and couples, are getting into the bourbon aspect. My wife, for example, did not like whiskey at all. She's been on the podcast a bunch of times. So just remember, this is about friendship. This is about relaxing, getting rid of the stress from the day. This is about, you know, keeping yourself healthy, because it's a proven fact that drinking whiskey, throughout history, it's been medicine. It was medicine before medicine was ever invented. And it definitely worked. It worked on colds. It worked on flus. It worked to keep yourself healthy, not in abuse. If you abuse it, you lose all the good effects. I mean, it keeps yourself healthy, but you got to keep it under control. Drink responsibly. So once it again, we're Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Check us out at www.scotchybourbonboys. Please, if you can, support us on Patreon. Hit that Patreon button. Also, The Spirit of French Lick and Alan Bishop. If you get a chance to get down to Indiana, they make some fantastic Indiana straight bourbon. Their distillery is now becoming a more mature distillery. Their whiskeys are aging longer. And the pot stills, they're the largest pot still distillery in Indiana, and Alan Bishop knows how to run them. Some spectacular stuff coming out of there. If you get a chance, the William Dalton French or Oak Stave three-barrel batch is out. It's a weeded bourbon. Check it out. Get over. It's available only in the gift shop right now. So anyways, once again, we will see you next time. My thing went away. And until then, live dangerously, my friend.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, if we don't find